Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. On today's program, we'll take stock of the year in politics, the year just ending, and the one about to begin. Joe Manis and Jason Rosenbaum will be with us a little bit later, but first, Missouri holds a prominent place in the rich and violent history of vigilantism in our country. The era came to an end a little over a century ago, and when it did, it marked the beginning of modern law enforcement. This transition period is chronicled in the latest book by author, historian, and native Missourian Joe Johnston. It's titled, It Ends Here, Missouri's Last Vigilante. You may remember Joe was with us a year ago talking about his earlier book on vigilantes titled, Necessary Evil, Handling Missouri with a Rope and a Gun. You may also remember that Joe, who is also an artist and a songwriter, is credited with coming up with McDonald's Happy Meal. Joe, welcome back.
Thank you, Don. Good morning.
I feel the need to mention that, but I almost hesitate to do so because I think people are going to latch on to that. Hopefully they'll hear some of the other things you have to say.
Exactly.
It's good to have you back.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, this is the third book in a series on vigilantes.
It is.
If you would, kind of broad stroke, the Cliff Notes version of that history in Missouri of vigilantism.
Sure. Well, what brought me to this subject was the first book, The Mack Marsden Murder Mystery, which was an actual cold case that happened on the Lemay Ferry Road, a murder that happened down there near the beautiful covered bridge north of Hillsborough. And I dug through the historical record to get the details and solve that case. It turns out not many people know there was a vigilante committee in Jefferson County in those days, the early 1800s. So that led me to wonder what else was going on at the time. Working with the wonderful people at the Missouri History Museum who published the Mack Marsden Murder Mystery.
And your current book.
Yes, the first book, yes. Mm-hmm. I went on to write to research the subject further and found out that Missouri, as you said, had the longest and bloodiest history of vigilante justice in the West. So that led to the second book, Necessary Evil. Now, it didn't quite tie up what happened. Why did we quit? Why aren't we riding around the streets on our horses shooting the bad guys today? And so we wrap that up in the third book, It Ends Here, the one that was just published.
Well, vigilantism was not always a bad thing, was it? I mean, there was a need for something like law and order back in the day.
Absolutely. You know, if you look at the history, especially of Missouri, here we were, the Louisiana Purchase, and when we were ruled by Spain, there was a law for a while that new immigrants could not live within 15 miles of a town. So what kind of people does that attract? Independent people, people who are unafraid, who can take care of anything, can handle anything that comes along. So that's who was living here when we were the Louisiana Purchase. And you know, the land was not open for settlement, but people came anyway because it's a beautiful place to live. So here we had all these squatters out here, no towns, no laws, no lawmen. Then gradually, of course, that was settled. Also, you know, the government started handing out land grants to Revolutionary War veterans. So we had the war with Mexico. And do you know, not many people are aware that the head of the Santa Fe Trail was near Kansas City. Mm-hmm. So all these soldiers came to train at Jefferson Barracks, went down the Santa Fe Trail to fight in Mexico and came back. And a lot of them settled in Missouri. So we had a state full of military veterans.
Everybody was armed, but there was very little in the way of law enforcement. So people took the law into their own hands in many cases.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think, you know, there were mistakes made, a lot of mistakes.
Lots of, yeah.
And, of course, violence always brings violence. But at that time, as you say, somebody had to do it. There were few laws on the books, few lawmen, and people lived out in the boondocks, in the hills, so it was and for people, when these vigilante committees formed and people rode and did some terrible violent things to these outlaws, it was done in the name of the public good. And that was the overall effect, is that it settled Missouri.
But basically, wasn't the justice imposed in every case the death penalty? There were no courts.
Generally. Yeah. That's one of the things that's there was a case that I wrote about in Necessary Evil in which there was a vigilante committee that formed to end this reign of crime. The main targets of the vigilante committee were some men who had committed some robberies. So they hanged them. And in a court of law, it would not have brought a hanging sentence. But yes, that's generally the way vigilante justice went.
Well, let's move the story along a little bit. In your latest book, what a rich cast of characters you have, some very well known. You have Jesse James, Frank James, Bat Masterson, Butch Cassidy, and the Sundance Kid. What role did they have in the whole vigilante process?
That's great. I love the Wild Bunch connection. There's a lovely lady in It Ends Here. Her name is Laura Bullion. She's also known as the Desert Rose and Wild Bunch Rose. She actually rode with the Wild Bunch, and she was arrested right here in St. Louis with her boyfriend, Ben Kilpatrick, who was also a member of the Wild Bunch. The funny thing about the story that's detailed in the book is that the police weren't sure who they had arrested. It's actually a case of how far law enforcement had come that they were able to find out who they were. There were photographs. Photographs could be overnighted on the train. Police had telephones. And so they gradually found out who they had in custody. They were charged with federal crimes and for passing banknotes that had been stolen on a train, which actually is another example of what happened to vigilantes. You know, the Wild Bunch wasn't afraid of farmers rising up and hanging them.
Yeah, let's just stop for a moment and explain what the Wild Bunch
was. The Wild
for those
Bunch.
Don't know.
Well, as you mentioned, Butch Cassidy and the Wild Sundance Kid.
All part
Kid.
Of the same gang.
Yeah, same gang out in Wyoming, the Hole in the Wall gang. And they had several members off and on, basically eight guys and three or four women who hung around with them. So they were known for robbing trains and traveling hundreds of miles. They would pull a job in Nebraska or Texas and ride back to Wyoming. And nobody was going to chase them that far, especially for the bank's money. As I like to say, if your neighbor steals your cow, you may go over to your neighbor's house and slap him and get your cow back. Mm-hmm. But nobody's going to saddle up and ride after the Wild Bunch because they robbed the railroad. The railroads had plenty of money. You know, nobody cared about that.
So what was an average take, do you think, in some of these train robberies?
Oh, golly. I have no idea. Yeah. But in today's money, it was a lot. One of the things that they stole in one of their most famous robberies in Texas was unsigned banknotes. Mm-hmm. These notes are federal banknotes made out to a bank, and they have to be signed by a bank officer. That's what Laura Bullion and her boyfriend, Ben Kilpatrick, were arrested with in St. Louis. And by the way, they were arrested thanks to an alert citizen. So that's another theme that we find toward the end of the vigilante era. We no longer have to saddle up, load our pistols, and ride after the bad guys. We can help the police in other ways, with tips, with being good witnesses, and that sort of thing.
So, you detail any number of stories in your book, and obviously we can't go into all of them, but I think the one in which you spend a lot of time is Jesse James, his assassination, if you will. And why don't you pick up the story? That is an act of vigilantism.
Absolutely. Bob Ford is fairly well known as the man who killed Jesse James.
Or Mr. Howard, who I believe.
That's right, Mr. Howard, the dirty little coward who shot Mr. Howard. That was Jesse's alias as he tried to live a civilized life. He wasn't very good at that. Bob Ford was wanted for a murder and some other crimes, and he actually had a deal with Missouri's Governor Crittenden. And the deal was you deliver Jesse to us and we'll forget about these other crimes that you've done. Well, Bob would later say that the deal was dead or alive, and the governor would later say that was not the deal. Bob Ford would also say that the deal was for the entire $10,000 reward, And Governor Crittenden would say that it was never for that amount of money. And he would say several thousand dollars were paid out. The fact was it was all railroad money. And so the state was not out any money. But we wonder how much of it the governor was able to distribute.
But this was state-sponsored vigilantism.
Absolutely. The governor set Bob Ford up. It was his job to decide how to deliver Jesse, and he delivered him dead. The tragic thing, figure in all of that is not only Jesse but Bob Ford. He was not a hero by any means, and that followed him everywhere he went.
Jesse was more of a hero to many people than Bob Ford ever would be, wasn't he?
Exactly, because there were a lot of people like Jesse in Missouri. You know, at the end of the Civil War, Jesse rode Jesse rode as a bushwhacker during the Civil War under William Quantrell and Bill Anderson. Saw and did horrible things as a teenager. So I'm sure in terms of what we know now of PTSD, for that a 17-year-old, 18-year-old to be exposed to those kinds of things.
But wasn't he also considered something of a Robin Hood in his time?
Yeah, you know, he started out being a lot more robbing from the banks, robbing from the trains. In the end, he robbed from some private citizens. He robbed he killed innocent men. He was a back shooter. So he ended up not the hero that he started out. He became more desperate as time went by. Mm-hmm. But I think the thing that people understood then that is so hard for us to understand now is that at the end of the Civil War, when Missouri was settled by this huge influx of people from north and south, Union men could go home. They could resume their lives. They could immigrate to wherever they wanted to go in America. Men who served the Confederacy could not vote, could not hold office, could not speak in public, couldn't preach, couldn't hold certain jobs, and men like Jesse, who were bushwhackers, had a price on their heads. When he tried to surrender, he was shot through the lung. So it was very difficult for a man like Jesse to live a straight, law-abiding life. And there, a lot of men were like him.
Yeah. We'll pick up the story. I have to take a break. We're talking with Joe Johnston, the author of It Ends Here, Missouri's Last Vigilante. By the way, Joe will be discussing his book tonight at 7 o'clock at the Missouri History Museum's AT&T Foundation Multipurpose Room. He'll also appear at 7 o'clock tomorrow evening at the St. Louis County Library headquarters on Lindbergh. Welcome back. Continue our conversation with Joe in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. And welcome back to our conversation with author Joe Johnston about vigilantism in Missouri. Joe, we've established that it was state-sponsored vigilantism that caused the death or resulted in the death of Jesse James, and that Bob Ford was the killer. And violence begets violence. He became the subject of vigilantism of a sort.
Exactly. Bob Ford bore a terrible burden after that. Every place he went, there was somebody who knew who he was and what he had done. A few people thought it was a fine thing, but the real problem with what Bob did is that he shot Jesse in the back. You just don't do that. So even men who thought that Jesse needed to be taken out of commission thought that Bob went about it the wrong way. So actually, there were several attempts on his life. In one example, he was sitting in a theater watching a show and a man came up from the row behind him and tried to cut his throat. So another man came into a saloon that he owned and tried to shoot him. So he met his end violently, thanks to Ed O'Kelly.
Ed O'Kelly. Okay. Just very briefly tell us what transpired there.
May I give you the background on Ed O'Kelly?
Sure.
Ed O'Kelly was also a Missourian, and grew up in the southeastern part of the state. His parents had given him away to be raised by grandparents. His father fought for the Union. His grandparents were from a Confederate family. So he was not only separated from his parents physically, but also ideologically. Ed O'Kelly grew up idolizing Jesse and dreaming of riding with him. But Jesse was assassinated just when Ed got old enough to do that. Ed wandered the West for a while, and then of all things, in all places, Ed O'Kelly and Bob Ford ended up in Creed, Colorado, a silver boom town. Bob Ford was a slick dresser and fast talker who was good at getting investors. He had an investor who set him up in a saloon and gambling hall and brothel in Creed. Ed O'Kelly walked in there and they tangled, and Ford threatened his life. There were a lot of people in Creed, business people and so forth, who didn't like Ford. And I'm not sure that these people would be classified as vigilantes, but there was a fellow named Soapy Smith, who's a figure in folklore who is known as a con man who organized con men. He had strong-armed fellas who kept everybody in line. He got a piece of every dollar that flowed out of Creed. And Bob Ford didn't want to cooperate with Soapy. So it was not too hard for Soapy's men to convince Ed O'Kelly that he needed to go ahead and kill Bob Ford before Ford killed him.
Again, Frontier Justice, Ed O'Kelly being the vigilante in this,
exactly,
in this particular case.
Exactly. If he didn't kill Ford, Ford had already said he would kill him.
And, of course, Ed O'Kelly met a bad end.
Right. Now, Ed O'Kelly, I must say, came nose to nose with Frontier, with real justice. He was arrested, he was tried, and sentenced to the Colorado State Prison. He served 10 years and got out and looked around the West and said, well, gee, where do I go now? Indian Territory had just become Oklahoma Territory. It was settled by land runs in which everybody lined up on the county line and a cannon was fired and people ran off, some people on foot, some on horseback in wagons, and some on bicycles to stake out a little piece of Oklahoma. So it was a wild, booming place. Ed O'Kelly thought that was a great place to go, and he went. And, of course, Ed O'Kelly was a terrible alcoholic who liked to fight. And he had, for 10 years in prison, he had neither alcohol nor anybody to fight. Mm-hmm. So he was looking for both. And he found that in riches of both in Oklahoma City, and there tangled with a dedicated lawman.
And that was the end of O'Kelly.
That was the end of O'Kelly. It was, I think, it is, it's Ed O'Kelly changed history by killing the man who killed Jesse James. He came to his own end at the hands of a dedicated lawman, and that is signals the end of the vigilante era, because we had career lawmen, not just somebody who took the job, a county clerk who was sheriff for a couple of years, but men who were dedicated, who spent their whole lives enforcing the law.
I want to pick that up. So Ed O'Kelly is your last vigilante?
Well, I think that is the question that the book raises. We will never see the end of vigilantism. It is part of civilization. It's part of the human condition. And especially in America, we govern by the people. Andrew Jackson said one time that if a mob agrees that a man should be hung for a crime, then that is the law. So if with that kind of an attitude filtering through our history, I don't think we'll ever outgrow that. But I think that as we grow toward peace and toward civilization, we have to understand that there are ways that all of us can serve the law without arming ourselves and taking to the streets.
Oh, I just want to back up for a second because you said that Bob Ford, when he killed Jesse James, it changed history. Obviously, it had James up. But how did it change history per se?
First of all, there was the deal with the governor. That was because it was such a high-profile case, it put Crittenden in the spotlight and changed the way that public officials could do that kind of business. Crittenden pardoned a felon about every 3 days, including many murderers, rapists, and so forth. Ford's deal brought with shooting a high-profile person like Jesse James brought a kind of attention that couldn't have been brought to that any other way. And public officials had to be more accountable, couldn't do those under-the-table deals anymore. The other thing is that by killing Jesse, it took that out of the law's hands and once again showed this is not the way we want our stories to end. We want these men brought to trial. We want the questions answered, and we want them put away at the hands of law.
You know, you talk about vigilantism is not dead, and we talked briefly before coming on the air about the famous case in Skidmore, Missouri, in which the town bully was done in his pickup truck in the middle of town, and to that day it remains unsolved. Somebody had to see it. It was in the middle of the day, as I recall, and a case, again, you agree, is modern vigilantism.
Yeah, the guy in Skidmore, who's I apologize that I can't recall his name, but his truck was actually surrounded by several people, and he was killed with bullets from several guns, yet nobody saw anything. So, yes, that's a case. There was a case just a couple of years ago in Oklahoma of a man, a disgruntled employee, who entered a workplace, stabbed a woman to death, and was in the process of stabbing another woman when the CEO of the company walked up and shot him dead. The CEO happened to be a member of the police auxiliary, but nonetheless, he was an armed civilian. So I think that those cases will always be a part of our culture, like it or not, good or bad. I think the thing that everybody kind of knew who Jesse was, and we know that he was probably destined for, if not a noose, then something like that. There have been a lot of other vigilante cases that leave unanswered questions. That's one of the problems with it. When we have that kind of instant solution, we don't get the answers brought out in court with investigation, with professional investigators and people who know what's legal and what's not.
Well, as you point out in the book, this was the eve of and then transitioned into the modern era, if you will. And I have in my notes here, frontier justice moved to more modern law enforcement. The tools were the telephone, as you mentioned. Fingerprints were coming into widespread use at that time. The Pinkertons were active throughout this period and evolved also. So you can see that this clearly was the time of transition.
Yeah, absolutely. So many lawmen, so many professional career lawmen, Alan Pinkerton, who ran the Pinkerton Agency, which had been wild. I mean, the Pinkertons have a checkered past. But by the time Alan got there, who was the son of the founder of the Pinkerton Agency, Alan Pinkerton had worked in the field. He knew what it was like to chase and apprehend men. He knew criminals. He knew lawmen. And he was able to take the agency into a new era. So they're just an example of what was going on all over the country. Now that the lawmen had fingerprints and cars and telephones, as you mentioned, it really changed everything. And there are more resources. If you consider a country sheriff who without a telephone and you know, doesn't have a car and he doesn't know what to do, how to go find this guy, and you compare that to the more modern era when we have budgets and we can spend the money, and if we have a case that hasn't been solved, we will stay after it until it is solved.
And Missouri was a big part in all of this that led to what we could call modern-day law enforcement.
Absolutely.
Right. Joe Johnson, I want to thank you so much for being with us. It's a fascinating book. I enjoyed it. I would recommend it. It's if you like that sort of thing, if you like history, very colorful history, by the way, this is the book. It ends here, Missouri's Last Vigilante. Thank you, Joe. Let me remind folks that Joe will be discussing his book tonight at 7 o'clock at the Missouri History Museum's AT&T Foundation Multipurpose Room, and tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the St. Louis County Library headquarters on Lindbergh. Thank you again, Joe.
Thank you, Don.
Coming up, a year-end look at politics with Joe Maness and Jason Rosenbaum. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.